Okay, back to a topic, back to the mitzvah of Yeshiva Sukkah. So last couple of weeks we spent time talking about the chefetz of a sukkah. Now that we have a sukkah, let's figure out what in the world we're supposed to do with the sukkah. So the Torah says, Basukos teishu shivas yomim. So the Torah Shabbat explains to us that the word teishu is teishu ke'ein taduru, that you have to live in the sukkah. So whatever activities that you associate with living in your house have to be done in the sukkah. So what are the primary activities? Why do we build houses? If you think about it, why do we have houses? Why don't we just walk the streets? So the answer is we need houses fundamentally for two activities. We need a place to sleep. We need a place to eat. I mean, you could theoretically walk around eating, but it's not the most comfortable thing to do. You want to sit down and have a place to call home. So there's no place like home vis-a-vis eating and vis-a-vis sleeping. And therefore, the two primary activities that are associated with the sukkah are achila v'sheina. This is a din min haTorah. And if a person does the act of either an achila or a sheina, which are expressions of dira, outside of the sukkah, so that's a bittul mitzvah deraisa sukkah. Now the Gemara tells us in Masechta Sukkah Daf Chazayin, there is no chiyuv to put yourself into an obligation of sukkah. Let's say I want to go an entire day, I want to go an entire week without doing a ma'aseh dira, so then I'm not mechuyuv in sukkah. It's mashal al davar doyma. It's like the person who doesn't want to wear a four-cornered garment is not mechuyuv to put the tzitzis on to a beged. You're not mechuyuv to put on a four-cornered garment. It's a lechat chila, it's a hita, whatever it is. But in terms of the real chiyuv, if you chose not to wear four-cornered garments, so you are circumventing the chiyuv of tzitzis. So to over here, if you choose not to do a ma'aseh adira, so then you're not going to be obligated in the mitzvah. But if you do choose to do a ma'aseh adira, either a chila or a shena, and if you choose to do that outside the sukkah, that is the bitl mitzvah deraisa b'sukkah steishu shivas yamim. So the question is, what exactly do you define as an achila or shena for these purposes? So the Mishnah tells us that oichle and achila sarai chutz l'sukkah, that one is permitted to eat temporary, short-term basis kind of eating, nashing, that kind of stuff is permitted to be done outside the sukkah. What is that based on? So Taisus explains, it's based on the same idea, that the chiyuv of sukkah is to replicate what you do in your house. So says Toysus, why do we build houses? We build houses to have real meals. We sit down at the table, have a real meal. A nash, a run, if it's running with a cup of coffee or something, running with an apple or something, those are things that we comfortably do outside of our homes the rest of the year. So whatever activities that we comfortably do outside of our homes the rest of the year, we're not mechuyev to do in the sukkah. But those activities that we associate with our homes the rest of the year, those activities must be done in the sukkah. So that's the source for the Mishnah of Eichlin Achilles Arai, Chutz the Sukkah, Achilles Kev is also. What's called Achilles Arai? How do you know what qualifies as Achilles Arai? So the Mishnah, the Gemara elaborate that there are really two different factors that go into determining whether something is Achilles Arai. One is qualitative and one is quantitative. So the Gemara starts out by talking about what kinds of foods require sukkah. What kind of foods are normally considered to be more Arai versus more Keva? So the Mishnah says explicitly that bread is for sure a type of a food that's potentially achilas keva. It doesn't mean every crumb of bread is necessarily achilas keva, but bread is definitely in the parish, definitely in the ballpark of discussing as being an achilas keva. Then the Gemara says, in a little bit of a different context, in Maseches Yuma, that there are other kinds of foods besides bread that could also potentially be chayav. Again, I didn't say how much of the food you ate, but at least from a qualitative point of view, there are other kinds of foods that could also lend themselves potentially to be called an achilas keva, to be chayav in a teir and sukkah. Those other foods, the Gemara uses the phrase called minei tagima. What exactly are those other foods? That's a three-way machlokes in Rishonim. So the Rashi seems to say that minei tagima means fruit. That's yochel in the Rishonim. All the other Rishonim assume it doesn't mean fruit. Fruit can never be. You can have 100 apples. That's never considered to be an achilas keva. Minei tagima means something different. What is that other image of minei tagima? So the Taisa ben Aparetz writes that minei tagima are those foods that usually accompany bread. So the chiddush of minei tagima is not only bread proper, but other kinds of foods, even if you happen not to be eating bread right now, but these are bread kinds of foods. The dvarim abayim lafis is a past. The things that you associate with the su'udah, so those kinds of foods are chayv and sukkah min haTorah. What are some foods like chicken, meat, fish, cheese, and all those kinds of things that you would make a sandwich out of? You eat together with a piece of challah, you have a piece of gefilte fish, so that's potentially an achilas keva according to Rabbi Peretz. And the Rosh of Maseches Sukkah says that that's also not right. Not only is Rashi not correct, but Rabbi Peretz is also not right, that the definition of minei tagima are mezainistic foods. So like we know from Mechus Brachos that there are certain similarities between the bracha mezainis and hamotzi. Mezainis is a lower level than hamotzi, but it's still in the same ballpark. So says the Rosh, whatever is chameshis minei dogon, if it's rice, that's not called chameshis minei dogon, that's mezainis, without chameshis minei dogon. But anything is chameshis minei dogon, you have a bowl of cereal, you have a piece of cake, you have a bowl of pasta, things like that. Those are potential foods that will be chayv in sukkah. So again, everybody agrees that pasta is for sure a qualitative kind of a food that could be chayv in sukkah. Everyone agrees that there's an additional category called minei tagima, and the three machlokes we showed what that additional category is. But this is all vis-a-vis quality of foods. What about quantity? How much of these foods do you have to eat in order to be labeled as chayv in sukkah? So here the Gemara tells us, the Gemara concludes in the Sechel Berachah Masechah Sukkah, that if you have a little bit more than a kibetza of bread, that's already cutting it too close. That's already considered an aloch to be an achilas keva. The shear is not kezayis, because this is not a dinner, this is nothing to do with achila. The shear kezayis is aloch marsin and huchas achila, but this has nothing to do with kezayis. This has to do with the shear of dira, shear of yeshiva. So here the Gemara says that you have to have much more than the kezayis, you have to have more than a little bit more than a kebetz, kebetz of oy, that's already considered to be an achilas keva. So the Gemara has that shear of kebetz of oy vis-a-vis bread. Should we carry over that shear vis-a-vis mina tagima also? So we ask behind. So yeah. So the difference between bread and mina tagima is just a qualitative difference, but quantitatively it should be the same thing. So if you have whatever you think mina tagima is, if you are a Rana Peretz person, you think gefilte fish is mina tagima, so you have kebetz of oy gefilte fish. If you are a Rush person, you think that lakshin kugel is mina tagima, so you have more than kebetz of oy of lakshin kugel. So that's what I would have said. That's what the Magen Avraham says. That we just simply plug in the numbers, the quantity of bread into the sugya of mina tagima. And the Mishnah Berurah quotes a lot of Achmarim who disagree with the Magen Avraham. A lot of Achmarim will say that when it comes to mina tagima, it's not enough just to have a little bit of kebetz of oy and call it a day. You need much, much more than that. You need certain objective criteria to be present that are going to be transformed this into an achilas keva. Just time to have two slices of, nurukuk or something, or to have a whole big fat bowl of pasta, that's not going to do the trick. You have to do something else to elevate mina tagiba into being achilas keva. Bread can be elevated by simply a quantity of a shear, but other foods require more. What are those other kinds of activities that can make the lakshin kugel and the pasta and the bowl of cereal or according to better parrots, a piece of gefilte fish or the slice of cold cuts or something? What are those kinds of things that can make it into achilas keva? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes Achmarim will say one of two things. Either if that's your meal, if lamaisi is sitting down to have a meal, so let's say a guy's sitting down on sukkahs and he's having a piece of chicken and he's having a slice of a turkey. Before that, he had his piece of gefilte fish, and he had all the foods. He didn't have any mezonos, he didn't have anything, but according to Ben Peretz, he ate just supper. So therefore, the Achronim write that would qualify as an achilas keva. Let's say when it comes to pasta. So if a guy sits down and has a humongous, goes to a restaurant, orders a pasta, a $30 dish of pasta, so he's stuffed to the gills. So that's considered to be a kviya suda. Remember when I was... years ago, so I once ended up spending Tisha B'Av in Munich with some NCSY group. So the place that we were staying at in Munich, so it was they told them that you have to prepare a lot of carbohydrates because it was for our tinnitus, we had a whole group of like 30 hungry teenagers and one hungry adult, and they said prepare a lot of carbohydrates. So we came there, so there were bowls and bowls and bowls and bowls of pasta, but nothing else. They thought there was only, they weren't supposed to serve anything else. They thought there was, and since we only eat cut, so all we had is pasta. So I remember I said I had about six bowls of pasta, and that was certain. So it actually worked, actually. Taco fills me up pretty good, much more than some of the other stuff that I ate in since my cola before. Anyway, so the bottom line is, if you kaveya, if you have a zakviya suda on your pasta, so that's considered to be a yeshiva that would require a sukkah midaraisa. Or the Achronim, right? Let's say I didn't have so much, but I got together with a bunch of chevra. We had pasta night. So even though I only had one bowl, but we're all, this is like schmoozing around. It's late at night, and we're all, having our pasta together. You're right. Okay, we're all having our bowls of cereal together. We're all sitting around eating our raisin bran together. So that's a shtickle kviyas. So the Achronim, many Achronim disagree with the Magen Avraham. Many Achronim say that in order to reach the shear of kviyas, for other kinds of foods, even mina tagima food, it's not enough just to reach the point of a kibetz of oy. So that's a shaila. At what point you mamish chayev in sukkah? So why is the shaila so important? It's important to count. First of all, you want to know the mice what you chayev in, but it also spills over to the following. There is a big machlekes in Rishayim about the bracha of leisha b'sukkah. When do you recite leisha b'sukkah? I haven't been in the sukkah yet. I'm going to walk in for the first time today into the sukkah, and I sit down. When do I make a leisha b'sukkah? So the Rambam sheet is when you go into the sukkah, you make a leisure sukkah. Whether you can eat, you're not going to eat. You're going to sleep, you're not going to sleep. Whether you're going to learn, you're in the sukkah. So b'sukkah station, if you're fulfilling to some degree a mitzvah of b'sukkah station, shiv is yom, so you can make the bracha even on doing nothing. And Rabbi Natam said that we only recite the bracha when you do something that's mamish chayev in sukkah. And not as it chayev in sukkah, it's the ikar yeshiva b'sukkah. Rabbi Natam is a chiddush that even though there's a diminutor, you have to sleep in the sukkah, that's for sure true. But nevertheless, Rabbi Natam says the ikar mitzvah, the ikar time and effort a person puts into the sukkah is the achila. And therefore, we dafka don't make a bracha on sheina b'sukkah. So therefore, Rabbi Natam says that you make a bracha when you go in to eat supper in the sukkah, lunch, you break whatever meal you're eating in the sukkah, that's when you make a leisha b'sukkah. So what would it then be? Let's say a guy was in the sukkah already in the morning, he ate breakfast, and then he went to the Spanish to learn, he went to Six Flags, he came back 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, and he wants to have some cake, he wants to have some zonis or something, so he wants to do it in the sukkah. He doesn't want to get involved in the shayla eating outside the sukkah, so he goes and he sits down, and he has a bowl of cereal in the sukkah at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So what's the din? Does he make a leisha b'sukkah? Does he not make a leisha b'sukkah? So here the sheet has become flipped now. According to the Magen Avraham, if you ate a kebetzer oitz, then that's called achila. So then you mamash b'chuyev, you have to make a leisha b'sukkah. But according to the non-Magen Avraham people, according to the other Acharonim, who say that you only chayev amidat hagima if it's either kviyasuda or if it's eating with a chabura, so then you're not really chayev in sukkah. It means you really could have eaten his bowl of cereal in the house. So you don't want to do that because you don't want to get involved in Magen Avraham and the Acharonim. Magen Avraham says it's a bitul mitzvah d'oraisa. So you're going to run to the sukkah, but can we say with a straight face to make a leisha b'sukkah? So according to the Rambam, yeah, but according to the Rabbeinu Tam, so we follow the view of Rabbeinu Tam. That meaning is like Rabbeinu Tam that we shy away from making a leisha b'sukkah unless one is really chayev too. So many people are knowing l'hokla and ishayel. Many people are knowing, since we don't really understand the Rabbeinu Tam 100%, and some Acharonim write that Rabbeinu Tam was not really mikra din. He just meant that, if you have a choice to make an achila or not, so wait for a few minutes to eat the food. But let's say a guy's going into the sukkah, all he's doing is sitting and learning. So some Acharonim say maybe even Rabbeinu Tam would agree, maybe you can make a bracha. So it's not 100% clear what Rabbeinu Tam meant. So many have the minig. I think that's probably a pretty prevalent minig in today's world. So the guy goes into the sukkah, say 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, and has a piece of cake. So he doesn't sit and count, oh, did I have a bechabura? Did I have it with everybody else? Did I have a kriya suda? Okay, I had a big piece of cake, a couple of cookies. So he had a kibetz of oiv. So he makes a leishim of sukkah and shoyin. So I think that many people follow that. Not everybody. Some people are choshish not to make a bracha, but I think that many people follow that. But see of the fact that according to the Magen Avraham Yechayev and the whole Rabbeinu Tam thing, we're not 100% sure we understand. But akol panim, at least in terms of what the basic structure of what you chayev in the sukkah, so achila definitely. And again, achila primarily means quantity and quality. You have to figure out what the quantity and quality is all about. There is a question about shtiyah, about the Gemara uses the lashon of shayse b'sukkah. Is that an absolute chiyav? Let's say a person has a cup of soda, so it's hard to believe you have to do that in the sukkah. The Mishnah says you could drink water out of the sukkah b'favor, so most drinks you would have on the run, so it's not such a big deal. You can have a cup of coffee outside of the sukkah. But what about wine or grape juice? So that's a big machlekes rishonim. Wine and grape juice required to be in the sukkah. So it's because of that machlekes that many of us have to practice that we make havdalah in the sukkah, great. We get nervous. We don't want to have drink grape juice. Even many shuls that have the minig of making kiddush and shul on Friday night and Yom Tov nights on sukkahs, many of them don't do that. We don't want to get involved in any shilas of drinking the wine and the grape juice outside the sukkah. So again, it's a big machlokes. We shine them whether wine and grape juice really is chayv in sukkah, but many have the practice trying to be makbid on that. Anyway, so bottom line is we discussed a little bit about the achila dimension. Now let's move over to the shena dimension. So here, the Mishnah, the Gemara b'Feirush, that one is required in Haftarah to sleep in the sukkah. If a person does a maisa dira of shena outside the sukkah, so that's a bitul mitzvah d'oraisa. Here the Gemara actually points out that there is no kula of shena saroi. The Gemara says that even a little small nap, you put your head down for a minute, so that's also considered to be a shena. The Gemara says because sometimes that's all you need. Sometimes that refreshes you. Like in the Bishmanish, the guy falls down, on the head of the Gemara, for 5 minutes, he wakes up all invigorated, he's able to finish the Tosfos. So the Gemara says that since a little bit of a nap sometimes gives you a kick, so that's considered to be, all shena is considered for the purpose of sukkah to be enough of a baisedira, and it has to be done in the sukkah. It was real bad, when I give a drush on, I give a shira on sukkahs, so I'm machshu people and falling asleep. Because the guy sits in the back of the shul and he dozes off, so he's been mahatil the mitzvah deraisa of sukkah. So I don't feel so bad because I have a good kula for them. Because I think the word is, the guy comes to the shir, so he's makbel pnei rabbi b'chak, he's coming to show cover to the rabbi. So the din is, when you're makbel pnei rabbi, you're part of the min ha-sukkah. At the time that you're going to visit your rabbi, you're not technically mechuyav in the sukkah. That was the famous Enzius White Kula. One of the famous Enzius White Kulas that we thought of over the years is that they always have these Enzius White programs out in the middle of nowhere. And they try to teach the public school kids a little bit about sukkahs, but very often there's no sukkah anywhere around. So they want to know, can they bring the public school kids to some, get them together or something, and teach them a little bit about Yom Tov, why to do this, but they have to bring them food. If they don't bring them food, so then the mice are not going to come. So they always bring the pizza. So they asked me many years ago, can we bring pizza and give it to boys? To girls you can give, but to boys, can you give boys actively, give them pizza on Chol HaMoed Sukkot when the mice are eating outside the sukkah? So my initial reaction was, I said, why do you have to give them pizza when you give them popcorn and potato chip popcorn and give them stuff that's not really technically chayv in the sukkah? So I was told it's not going to do the trick. It's not going to draw the crowd. So I said, so why don't you make it fancy? Why don't you serve them Chinese? Send them chicken. So send them sesame chicken. So give them some nice Chinese food. It'll be some Yom Tov a little bit and encourage them to go. I told it's not in the budget of NCS White to provide for Dana Cholomite. Okay, sure. So we're stuck with the pizza. So I thought that it was okay. I thought because this is called Machmur Pre Rabbi V'chag, these kids who are coming, they're coming to visit the Rebbe. Who are the Rebbe? The 16-year-old Madrich. He's the only one who taught them anything. So most of their Torah, it could be he's the Rebbe Muvuk. He taught them Aleph Beis. He taught them about Kosh Baruch, taught them about Shabbos. So whatever Torah they know, they learn from this one Madrich. So that's his, that is the Rebbe. So the Machon for Rav B'chag is the Mishnah says Beferish, is put them in a Sukkah. So that was the Kula. So we still rely on that Kula. That's just why Adayim is interesting. Anyway. We've had a few applications of, the Mishnah says that when a person is Zaisi permits for the Potom and Asukah, so we had a shot a couple of years ago, there was a whole group that was invited by Trump at the time to the White House. It was, I don't remember, it was a Kim Simcha group or something, or Hask, I forgot what it was some group of Chesed organization that the campers, whatever it was, were invited by the White House for a meal on the Chol HaMoed Sukkot. And there was I think it was the first year of the president. I think it was no sukkah. I think in the later years, I think they maneuvered a sukkah in the White House. But I think there was no sukkah at the time. So some of the older people, not the kids never who were sick, but some of the madrichim and the counselors and the administrative staff were invited also. So they asked me, are they allowed to go to the White House and eat outside the sukkah? So I said, Shachli, I'm sure you'd have the sukkah. I said, what about the mezuzahs and washing? You'd have a whole suda outside the sukkah. So I thought that probably mikra din is also mutter. Because the Gemara says that mitzvah, let's say it's the Kras HaMalachim, Afilu Machi Akum, the Gemara says that even non-Jewish kings, there's a mitzvah to be mechabed them, there's a mitzvah to be, it says Beferesh Shulchan Aruch, mitzvah, let's say, the Kras HaMalachim. So, we had all Shikul Torah, why president, even if he's not in Melech Legabi the Bracham, maybe he's in Melech Legabi this. So I thought that Mikra Dins is also like the same Kula. So the same way NCS, why was Michael to let the kids Machmur Pnei Rabbim, so that Machmur Pnei Trump is also a Shtikal Kula. A couple of strange Kulas we had in the Sukkah over the years. Anyway, back to the story. So the bottom line is the guy wants to go to sleep out of the Sukkah. That's a big, big problem. You're not allowed to sleep out of the Sukkah, even a Shenas Aroi. So the Ramah, there's a famous comment where the Ramah is looking around Krakow, looking around Poland in the 1500s, and he says that he doesn't see too many people sleeping in the sukkah, only the medachtigim bedavar, the really, really big Yirei Shemayim are the ones who are sleeping in the sukkah. The average guy, average Shomitai Mitzvahs, are not sleeping in the sukkah. The Ramah is trying to figure out what's going on, what's the kula based on. So the Ramah has two suggestions. So one suggestion, the Ramah says that if you're married, so you're only mechuyev to sleep in the sukkah, he claims, if your wife can sleep with you. Why? Because the Torah says the sukkah is teishru. Teishru means ke'ing taduru. So madiri ish v'ishto, af sukkah ish v'ishto. So if you have a private sukkah, so you're supposed to go with your wife and sleep in the sukkah, like you replicate what you do in your house. But there are more rights that we live in Krakow, and we don't have room to build sukkahs. We have one communal sukkah. Anyone who did in Krakow? No one went to Poland, in Krakow. So remember, the whole city wasn't so big. So it was two blocks, the whole Jewish part of the town. The shul is still there. The Ramah shul is still there. I gave a shiur there in the Ramah shul. I gave a shiur about one of the Chuvas HaRamah. I gave a shiur in the Ramah shul about the Chuvas HaRamah. So the area wasn't big enough, so they didn't have private sukkahs. They had public sukkahs outside the shul. So the Ramah writes, well, the guy's going to come, so his wife's going to sleep. That's not sanua, it's not appropriate. So if his wife can't sleep, there's a male he can't sleep, he's not mechuyav to sleep there either, because it's ma sukkah ish ve'ishto, etc. That was the Ramah's famous school. Of course, that only covers for people who are married. So the many Acharonim disagree with the Ramah. The Vargon disagreed with the Ramah. Many Acharonim said that Lahoyut Ram, we never heard of such a drush. There's no such a did that Masuk Ishtel, that concept doesn't exist. The Magen Avraham writes that even though the Ramah is not right in terms of his application, sometimes the Magen Avraham says it could be Potter anyway, ultimate Stire. There's a general din about Mitzvah Potter in a Sukkah. So the Magen Avraham says, let's say, for example, that it's the husband and wife want to be together, but she's Muteres. So the husband wants to be together with his wife. You tell him he should first be in the house, and then he should get up in the middle of the night and go back down to the Sukkah. So it's Mitzvah, it's a pain in the neck. No one wants to do that. So the Magen Avraham says it could be that that's called Mitzvah Potter in a Sukkah. Okay, that's a different Ptur. So the Magen Avraham says, but that's only going to be true when she's Muteres. So half the month, that's not going to work. The Ramah's cool of ma Sukkah Ish Ve Ishta, that's even when she's in Eidah, they sleep in the same room. So if you go with the Ramah's cool, that's going to apply to all married men. And throughout the month, according to the Magen Avraham, it's going to be case by case. Is it a Lelon? Not a Lelon. It's not going to be so simple. And the Gerah doesn't buy into this whole story. The Gerah says that he doesn't think the Ramah's cool is correct. So the Yesh Ve Ishta, different opinions, there are different practices, that aim is there. But then the Ramah says he has another reason why he thinks that people are potter. He says because it's freezing cold. He said it's very, very cold in Krakow in the wintertime. So I when I first read this Ramah, I had this image, like it must be like blizzards, you know, must be like below zero. So I checked the weather forecast for Krakow, the average early October weather. It's colder than New York, but it's not the North Pole. It's not so cold, 30s, whatever it is. It's not like a fair look, the average for things haven't changed much. The weather hasn't changed much in Krakow since then. I mean, maybe global warming's changed, knocked it up a degree or two, but it hasn't changed that much in the last 400 years. So, but the Ramah says that's very, very cold. It's very, very hard to sleep that way. It's very hard to sleep the way. It's Chumitzdar, it's Potter in a Sukkah. So the Ramah says, but Lamaisa, people eat in the Sukkah. So what's the terror? The terror is eating the sukkah. It's not so hard. In the sukkah, you're not going to be there that long. It's 20 minutes. You throw on a coat. You throw on a blanket. You throw on another sweater. A sweatshirt. You figure out an eitzah. Sleeping in the sukkah is such a to-do with 16 blankets, one under another, on top of another. That is such a pain, such a complicated. If people don't have so many blankets. So it's not responsible. So that's the famous psak of the Ramah. The Ramah gives you two reasons to exempt people, to explain why the minhag ha'olam was in Europe that most people didn't sleep in the sukkah. The question is whether those two svaras apply for us today. So the first svara, maybe it applies, but many achrim said the svara wasn't true. But clearly that only applies to married people, it doesn't apply to bachrim. The second svara, it depends how cold it is. It depends. So some nights it's cold, some nights it's not cold. So for many, many, many years, I refused to buy a heater for the sukkah because I was always nervous. They tell me that it's dangerous. I mean, so finally, this winter, this past sukkah was scheduled to be a pretty cold sukkah. So finally we prevailed. We decided we got a special super-duper outdoor heater that was made with special safety, 15,000 different safety precautions on it. So finally, we invested $150. We bought it. It was great, as long as you love it to the heater. If you sleep mamash next to the heater, then it worked. So that added mind, because my you know, one of my boys was there to Israel this year, so it was just me and my older son in the sukkah. So cold doesn't faze him. So he slept in the regular, you know, part of the sukkah. And I slept close enough that I was warm, far enough that it wasn't dangerous. I mamash slept kimah on top of the heater. It was a game changer. Mamash legami, game changer. Because one, I think it was Friday night, somehow, I don't know, something happened to the, by mistake, it was linked up the lights to the clock. I don't know, something happened that Lamaisa went off Friday. It wasn't working Friday night. It's not a cold Friday night. But in the old style way, the extra 16, the t-shirts, sweatshirts. But it's a good, so it's maybe Kedai. Just make sure you get a safe one. It's a good investment. And just make sure you hog that spot next to the closest to the heater. Okay, anyway. So it depends. Sometimes it's 70 degrees outside. So sometimes it's beautiful. There have been nights over the years in Bergerfield where it's been more pleasant to sleep outside than it is inside. You get a nice warm night. One year, I remember, it was an unbelievably hot sukkah. It was over 90 degrees. It was in the high 80s at night. It was impossible. It was so hard to sleep there because it was so hot. So again, yesh v'yesh. So the Ramah's cool. Sometimes it applies, doesn't apply. L'chora, this whole Ramah only applies at night. None of this svar applies in the daytime. I think a lot of people are not aware of this. A lot of people take naps outside the sukkah in the day. That's a big problem. Main for bachur, main for married men. There's mamish no kula. A person never takes a nap during the daytime without his wife. I mean, come on. Come on, people take naps. It's not Dira Ishva Ishto, the Ramah meant at night. Guy takes a nap, his wife's not home. So it's so cold usually. Usually a sukkah is in the 60s, you know, it's not terrible. And even if it's cold at night, it's not so good for Elach in the daytime. You don't need the heaters in the daytime. So the Fiani is night, if it's comfortable in the sukkah, even if you're married, your wife's not interested in taking a nap with you in the afternoon, you're mechuyav min haTorah to take a nap in the sukkah. I think people should be more aware of that. Sometimes there's another cool, sometimes it's mamash mitzvah, sometimes there's a lot of noise, sometimes kids are running around. Okay, you know, the next door neighbors are singing too loud. I want to take a nap. It's after lunch. I want to lay down. I want to go to sleep. And the next door neighbors are first starting zmiras. So I can't sleep. Okay, so that's mistar. Mistar is part of the sukkah. So this idea that the Rabbah tells us that you have this phenomenon, that you have a sukkah that you can use for achila, but you really can't use for shena. It's too cold to sleep in. And the Rabbah saying that's what the Olam was doing. So that's a very, very potentially difficult halachic concept. I mean, you have a sukkah that can't be used for sleeping, but can be used for eating. So the reason why that's a difficult concept, because there's another Ramah in Uchot Sukkah that quotes a Rav Yoh that says that that's not a good sukkah altogether. Rav Yoh says as follows, let's say you have an area, I can build my sukkah in a safe place in the backyard, you know, it's gated out, and et cetera, or I can build my sukkah mamash right in the front yard, and it's a dangerous neighborhood, and I'm very, very nervous to sleep in the sukkah in the front. So the Rav Yoh writes, the Mordechai quotes a Rav Yoh, and the Ramah quotes his Rav Yoh, that if you build a sukkah in a place where you can't sleep there because it's too dangerous, then guess what? Then you can't eat there either because it's not a sukkah. It's not a dira. So you can't build a place, a makam dira, that you can't do half of what normal diras are done for. So if you build a sukkah that's only ru'i l'kach, just to eat and not to sleep, that's you can't be yet to even eat him. So chiddush gadol from the Rav Yoh. So the Chacham Tzvi says he doesn't think that whole shtickle Torah is right. He says, well, never heard of such a thing. The Chacham Tzvi has a raya. He says, the shear of a sukkah is 7 tvachim by 7 tvachim. How could anybody ever sleep in such a sukkah? It's impossible. How are you ever going to sleep comfortably? Obviously, when the Gemara says you could have a 7 by 7, it means you can eat in the sukkah. You're not going to sleep. You sleep curled up in a 7 by 7. You're never going to be comfortable sleeping. So you see that it's shaykh to have a sukkah, achila, without having a sukkah, it's not an impossibility. So what would the Rav Yoh respond to that? Some of the Rav Yoh would respond that you can sleep there. If you make yourself comfortable enough, you could possibly sleep there as well. So this past summer, I flew down to Florida for something, and we had to end up flying on Spirit. So anyone that ever flown on Spirit before knows that the seats are extremely, extremely crowded. They pride themselves on the cheap flight. There's a reason why they're the cheapest flight in town, because there's no room, and you pay per, if you bring a shopping bag, you pay another $30. Whatever, anything comes that you're not wearing, gets charged. So I remember I sat down with my boys in the three seats in Spirit. And I remember my wife was on a different flight. She was coming from somewhere else, whatever it was. So the three of us walk onto the plane. We sit in our seats. And my boys are, they're nice size boys. So my feet, we couldn't figure out an even maneuver to sit, like, straight. So I made the ha'ara at the time. I said, this flight is going to be machriya. Who is right? Whether the Rav Yoh is right, whether the Chacham Tzvi is right. Can a person sleep in an area that's 7 tefachim by 7 tefachim? So I'm sorry to report that we did not sleep well on that flight. Doesn't bode well for Chesukah. So the Mishnah Berurah, Rabbi, poses a famous question. He says, wait a second, it's a Stirin Ramos. That if the Ramos says that you have to have a sukkah that's real lekach for all things, and if it's not real lekach, then sukkah is no good. So how can you have a sukkah in Poland, in Krakow, if you can't sleep there, so it's possible for eating also? So what's the answer to that problem? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes two different answers. The Mishnah Berurah says, now, when you have a sukkah that you can't sleep because it's cold, what do you mean you can't sleep because it's cold? You could sleep there if you get enough blankets, enough sleeping bags, you go under 16 layers, it could be royal l'shena. You're not mechuyev to do that because it's impossible to do that. You know, it's a pain in the neck to do that, but you could. It is theoretically possible to do that. If you build a sukkah in the middle of a miserable neighborhood that and you could have built it in such a nice, comfortable place, and you know, on your deck or something, and you decide to build it in the middle of Times Square, so that's a problem because it's impossible to use to sleep in comfortably. That's one answer the Mishnah Berurah writes. So Eidish Tamei says the Mishnah Berurah that this svara of when the Ramos says the name of the Rav Yoh, the Mordechai, that if you build a sukkah that's not shayach to do all activities, so it's not called a sukkah, that means because you have another option. Means you could have built your house in a good way or in a bad way. You chose to build it in a bad way. So that's what the Rav Yoh is saying, that a house that's built in a mashunatik way, who in their right mind would ever build a house just to eat and not to sleep? It'd be crazy. So that's not called a house. That's not called a mechondira. That's not called a sukkah. But let's say you have a situation where It's impossible. You live in a place where it's impossible to sleep in a house. It just doesn't exist. It's not a, so you would walk the streets, so you'd build a house for eating also. So says the Mishnah Berurah, the name of the Acharonim, that if your only choice is to build a house for one activity, so you build it for that one activity. It's cold in Poland. What do you want to do? Control the weather? Kadosh Baruch Hu made it that it's 20 degrees in Poland every night in October. What do you want from me? So I shouldn't build a house altogether because it's too cold to sleep in my house. I shouldn't build a house to eat. So I build a house to eat, and that's considered to be a mixus bias. It's also considered to be a bias. So the only time that the Rav Yoh passed a sukkah that's not royal l'shein is possibly for achila, that means one of two things. Either it's mamash absolutely impossible to ever, ever, ever conceive of sleeping under any circumstances, or, following the second answer, the Acharonim, that you had another option. But if Lamaise, you have another option, you have another option. That's what the Pesukim says. The guy lives in a bad neighborhood. That's a dangerous neighborhood. Anyway, he builds a sukkah is going to be dangerous to sleep in. Well, he can't be out in the midst of sukkah. So we assume, of course, again, the guy lives in the heights. He's afraid to build a sukkah anywhere to sleep in the sukkah. So he eats in the sukkah. He eats in the mitzvah of eating the sukkah. That's in the stomach, not what the Rav Yoh was driving at. Anyway, so Akopar, we spoke a little bit about the basic tour of the mitzvah of sukkah in terms of achila, shdiya, shena, etc. And we've talked about the whole week. We have not yet mentioned the uniqueness of the first night of sukkah. So for next week, we'll try to talk a little bit about that. What I want to try to do is really, I want to finish up sukkah. Originally, I thought we'd do sukkah, then dalaminim right away. But it's not going to happen, because if we do dalaminim, then we're going to lose that Purim. So it's silly to do Purim after Purim. So the way we'll do is, maybe we'll just finish up sukkah, the midst of sukkah next week, and then we'll already roll into Dal Parshas and to Purim. Will give us 3 weeks for Purim. Then we'll be able to do from Purim to Pesach. We have to Pesach, and then you have to Pesach. We can catch up Dal Minim. Never too late. Okay, we'll figure it out. We'll figure out later. Figure out something. This is a funny schedule. Yeah.